So I'm Denise, and we are in the studio with Mac for Recovery Radio. And thank you so much for being here, Mac. I really appreciate you taking your time to come to the studio and talk with our listeners.
You're welcome. No problem. My pleasure.
Yeah. So I've known Mac for a little while, and we haven't gotten to spend much time visiting lately, but he's here today to share some things going on in life. And we were going to start off with, just childhood and where you grew up and your experiences then that they like to share.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first to get it all clear so all of my friends know exactly who I am.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, some call me Mac. Some here calls me Black Mac, and back home, half of my friends and cousins don't know my real name. They call me Buck. So, and then I have some that calls me E.T. Anyway, I'm originally from Florida. You know, I came here, I moved to the Northwest in 2003, but I was raised on a farm out west of Fort Lauderdale. And I love the country life. I'm a country boy. We moved from South Florida to North Florida in the country. You know, Mom kept me in the woods, but my life changed dramatically. You know, I guess between getting out of high school, you know, I mean, I had work ethics, but I didn't have a whole lot of skills. And I guess the bad part is when I went back to my neighborhood from back to South Florida, you know, because it was always when we had to move from the farm into the city, which I hated. But
and what was the city like at that time when you were growing up there? Did that look like?
Well, in the city of Fort Lauderdale, it was, I don't know, to me, being a country boy, it was kind of cruel. You know, I mean, I met they call themselves gangs that I've gotten beat up for, you know, and taking my lunch money, you know, even taking your shoes. I had a BB gun what my mom bought me for Christmas, and I went hunting the only little woods in the city, and the little gang, Jeffrey Austin gang, they caught me and took my BB gun.
And about how old were you when you were living there? Do you remember?
I was about, this was between 5th and 6th grade.
Okay, so pretty young, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 5th, 6th grade, because I moved to North Florida in the 7th grade. But yeah, and to me, it was cruel, and I didn't like it. I was grateful, you know, to move to North Florida in the country. You know, we had dirt roads again, and it was awesome, but then I moved back to North Florida, South Florida, you know, when I finished school and stuff. And I basically had to adapt to the environment, which was, you know, drugs and thugs, you know, my cousins, you know, friends. But I had a different attitude, a different aspect about, you know, about the way things should have been, should be. You should never disrespect the elders, and I was big on that, or should never stress the children. And seemed like the city slickers, the thugs, the gangsters, whatever, they had no respect for the elders, and that didn't set with me. So in my neighborhood, I was basically a guardian. I mean, I did the same thing they did, but only I protected. The older people, they loved me. Every time they see me, they call me, give me a hug. And no matter how big a hurry I in, I took the time to talk, you know, and sit with them. And that's what made me, I'm kind of, I don't want to say a legend, but I have great memories, even though, you know, it was, I guess, a hard gangster thug life, whatever. But I have great memories and a pretty good name in my neighborhood from doing the right thing, even though I was a thug. So I consider myself a different kind of thug.
Mm-hmm. And did you have family? Was it family and friends that you grew up with there?
Yeah,
this was in Florida.
Yeah, South Florida. In South Florida, it was my one brother, my grandmom, which I stayed backwards and forwards with, but my cousins was all there. And actually, I love North Florida better, but South Florida is where I can do the gangster thing out of the eyes of my mom.
And explain to me what the gangster thing means.
Well, it means selling drugs. To me, it just felt good to have money and everybody like you. And when you have money and drugs, everybody like you. You know, and it's trying to get money, you know, and protect your own, and, you know, collecting jewelry.
So were you using at the time?
I was only doing pot at the time that I started selling. And the way I started, I was always had work ethics because I was raised on a farm, and I got sandblasted one day. And long story short, I got a settlement for my hand. I got sandblasted on the back of my hand, and I had $7,000 or more, and it was going fast, and I was popular because I had the money. And then I thought, man, when this is gone, everybody's going to look at me like a joke. So I had about $1,000 and something left, and I went to the city in Miami, and I seen guys standing on the corner with AKs and up on the balcony with guns, and that's where I went. And I just bought, you know, I bought drugs, and I took them back to my neighborhood and broke them down, you know, and I made a profit, and that thousand and something lasted me 5 years.
So how long did this go on until what age were you before there was like a change from what was going on there?
I'll say it changed when I started about 20. I was 24. Mm-hmm. You know, unlike a lot of others, they started at 15, 16. Mm-hmm. You know, some of my homies or my homies' nephews or yeah, and so I started pretty late, I guess.
For the area.
Yeah.
Of what you grew up around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. I guess because, you know, mom kept me in the woods. Mm-hmm. And it got real hectic for me because everybody either wanted the position that I had or just wanted me out of the way or wanted what I had. And yeah, I had to use my wits. I had to, you know if somebody moved from this spot to that spot, I had to know why they moved. It was vital to know. Like if I come out and if somebody leave from the street, I have to know why they left.
Were there safety issues for you? I mean, that like was, emotionally, what's going on during this time when you're selling and you know, in this area?
Yeah, well, that's part of the emotional thing. I got very emotional because I was hurt and stressed because my own, I would just say my own, as in not just my kin, but also black, mm-hmm. was trying to, I don't want to say have me murdered, but that's basically it. For reasons, it's hard to explain. Well, have me murdered, so then their reason was to get my clients, my clientele, basically, mm-hmm. you know, and then they'll have other friends, what they know from another city, and they'll tell them about me, and they'll come out and try to rob me.
So it sounds like it was emotionally, I mean,
it was
life was in danger.
Yes, it was very emotional. It got very emotional.
Did that, at that time, as all that's going on, and emotionally you're, I'm guessing you're probably in fear.
Yes.
Are you thinking about, man, should I make a change? Should I move away? I mean, like, what are your thoughts as, like, you're starting to hear that your life's in danger because of the world of drugs and how all that works, especially in big cities?
Yeah. Well, it was very emotional because the ones that was trying to set me up, you know, was my cousins. You know, one or two of my cousins, which was hurt really bad, and getting in a fight with one or two of my cousins was a thing that hurt because what we was fighting for, you know, was, I thought, and I thought it was, very uncalled for, because I didn't really value a dollar over the life of my, not just a human, but especially over my kin. And it seemed like to me, they rather have the value of a dollar than to have, me around my life. And that hurt.
So we're going to take a break and let Mac get a drink of water and listen to listen to a song from OCs. And we'll be back to Recovery Radio here in just a few minutes. I'm in the studio with Mac, and this is Denise.
Twice as nice.
Hello, you're listening to KRFP in Moscow Pullman. My name is Denise, and this program is Recovery Radio, and I'm here in the studio with Mac. And we've just been talking the first part of the show about Mac's been sharing his life as a young person and as a young adult living in South Florida, and about as he calls it, thugging and just selling and his life being in danger and that. And so we'll just go right back in. Go ahead, Mac.
Okay, yeah. I was explaining about, you know, the way I was feeling about the way my life was looking. You know, it seemed like it wouldn't go nowhere. But, I mean, I had a lot of money, you know, a lot of drugs. But it wasn't a good feeling. Mm. It was a terrible feeling because, you know, of the people who wanted what I had, and it was like they didn't care if it was my life, or they wanted my life to get it, and they wanted that in different ways. Some wanted it because, you know, I had been in fights a couple of times, and a lot of times, and the pride of the other, they want, you know, want you killed, but they ain't brave enough to do it. Mm-hmm. So they set you up with the police, you know, and it got so bad that I'd come out my door and I'll see the guys standing in the alley. And by the time I get there, everybody's gone. And I go on this other street looking for them, and everybody's gone. And, you know, to me, why is everybody avoiding me? You know, it's not that they're afraid of me, or was it that they knew something was going to happen to me? Mm-hmm. And my thought and experience is they knew something was going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. And when I decided that, when I got arrested and went to prison for possession for sales.
And about how old were you when that happened?
I was 24. Mm-hmm. I was right at 24. And I say, to me, that was a late start. Mm-hmm. But
because in the neighborhood that you grew up.
Yeah.
Kids were
in the environment.
Selling,
yeah.
Right,
they
kids
started
were doing and selling drugs
15,
really young.
16.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Yeah, even younger. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I went to prison, and which was more of an adventure. You know, I learned there you have to respect, you know, not only the prison guard, but the next person. Mm-hmm. And depends on what prison you go to.
So the prison that you went to, did some of the people know who you were?
Yeah, I bumped into people that knew me. Mm-hmm. You know, some that was from a different part of the city, and some that was from my same neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some that I dated or was dating their sister, you know, then they come in and they'd be the one that tag along with me. Mm-hmm. You know, because I really didn't hang out with anybody, but I can get along with anybody. Mm-hmm. So that's what, and still my mentality that I still think was a bit different, but it was respectful. I had a respect for, I give anybody the respect when some people don't do that. They see you and they just don't like you. Mm-hmm. You know, but.
So how long did you, if you don't mind me asking, did you serve in prison?
I had a 18-month sentence, which I was only supposed to serve 6 months. And I ended up doing 16, mm-hmm. You know, from fighting and what else? Okay, and 11 of those, though, was in work release in Miami. Mm-hmm. And I'd leave and say I'm going to work, and I'll be somewhere else and get caught, and that mm-hmm. makes your time extend. Sure. So I did 16 months on an 18-month sentence. And anyway, when I got out, you know, that's when I started doing drugs. Mm-hmm. And so I started selling drugs again to support my habit. Mm-hmm.
And are you living in the same area in South
yes,
Florida?
Okay. Yes, the same area. It was like it's like a trap.
And during this time, before or after, I mean, had your family or friends said anything to you like, hey, Mac, I think I'm concerned about you, or just anything?
Well, that was a thing for me. I mean, with my mom in North Florida and my older sisters, you know, they was in another part of the city. I was, you know, especially when I was doing drugs, I didn't want them to see me. And by them being somewhere else, I was free to be Buck Wild, which that was one of my nicknames. But what changed my heart once, my second older sister, she seen me going through an alley and we stood there face to face. And she stood there and she told me she loved me. She said I was a handsome looking man, but I was looking terrible at the moment. And that hurt me so bad. I took off and ran. I cried for about, I don't know how long, because I didn't want, especially her or my mom, to see me like that. You know, so the love of my family, it changed my heart. And then with my life, by doing drugs and selling drugs, it put a different outlook on me. Or I felt different. And it put a different outlook on me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made me look like a worse person, a real bad person.
So when you changed from selling drugs and just and smoking weed to selling drugs and using,
yes.
And were you using hard drugs?
Yes. Well, cocaine. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest I've done.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway. The second time, so I went to prison twice, and the second time, to me, I say I got arrested. The first time, to me, I always say I got arrested. The second time, I said I got rescued because I was on drugs bad, and luckily, I didn't get a whole lot of time the second time.
So when you say you got, what was the phrase you just used? Instead of
rescued.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
Well, because I was doing drugs and selling drugs, and it wasn't going nowhere, and it was even worse than when I was selling drugs and they was trying to take my place. Mm-hmm. So my life was still in danger, and I felt like my life was worthless. And by me doing drugs, and I got arrested and went to prison the second time, to me, that was a rescue.
And was this in Florida?
In Florida, mm-hmm. In South Florida. And when I got out, you know, I felt like you can feel your environment. Mm-hmm. And I almost started right back again, which to me is insanity. When you keep going to prison and getting back out, going on the same block, you know, doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it took me feeling like my life was in danger. And I went in a certain place and hid, and I seen the police. Everybody done was avoiding me again, and they was hiding from me. Mm-hmm. And this was late at night. And so I was on one street, and I hear the police coming down the other street, you know, fast. And everybody knows the sound of the police car. And we run the certain way.
And this was going on after you'd gotten out of prison the second time. And so had you gone back to using and selling?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Addiction is...
It's a trap. Mm-hmm. I had nowhere else to go.
Right.
Well, most of my friends there had nowhere else to go. And that's where, when I went back in 2012, all of them are dead or still in prison or died in prison, which is what would have been my fate if I wouldn't have had the opportunity to move back to North Florida, where I finished school at. And when I seen that my life was really about to end, I made that decision to go to North Florida, which I had that choice. A lot of my homies didn't have that choice.
And did you have family in North Florida?
Yes. Awesome. My mom, we had a house. We still have that same house in North Florida. And by me having that opportunity, you know, to change, that's the only way you can change is to leave the environment. Mm-hmm. You can't just quit and stay there in that environment.
because where you were in that city, it was all going on around you.
Yes,
constantly.
It was going on around me, and if you try to quit, somebody's going to come give it to you, and you ain't going to turn it down. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, I had an opportunity for change, and some that had opportunity to change was afraid of change.
Sure,
they wouldn't move. They couldn't. That's all they knew. You know, so anyway, I went.
So let me ask a question. So you moved to North Florida, and you're there with family. And so were there, was there any support or different things that you did to make the change from using to not using? Or was it just not selling? Were you still using and just not selling? Or how did that all?
No, I stopped using and I stopped selling. And even though it was there. I mean, it wasn't out in the country where we lived, where my house was, but the love of my mom, which I was staying with, and my two younger sisters, I wasn't afraid of anything. I wasn't afraid to sweat, and I wasn't afraid of challenge. So I worked. I mean, right now I have many skills. I can do concrete. I can do welding. I'm a landscaper. And my favorite is write. I love to write. I'm a pretty good writer. But, yeah, the love of my mom, the respect of my mom and my two younger sisters kept me from getting into what I see in North Florida is what I did in South Florida. So I already know what that is. So anyway, my best jobs was concrete and staying with my mom, I would give my mom, now I'm finding out way more money than I had to. Because working concrete, I was making $400 or $500 a week. And I'd give her $300, sometimes $400, depends on what I want to buy.
Sure.
You know, and, but it was nice. It was nice. And then I started going with a lady. You know, she was pretty, she was red, she had the gold and the bling bling, and she was selling drugs. And what thrilled me is that, you know, everybody wanted her, and she liked me. Like, so I feel like 10 feet tall, you know, but that put me, even though I would give her tips on what to do and how to do it, and she loved that idea, and it worked. But that put me back in the eyes of the law, of the system. And I ended up going to prison again just because I was dating her. I was working. I was doing concrete, and then I was doing logging, you know, a certain part of the year. And I come home from logging, and I get stopped by the cops. They surrounded the car, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, what's going on? I hadn't sold drugs in 2.5 years. They arrested me and said they had me on video selling to an undercover cop. It's like, that's impossible. Long story short, I still ended up going to prison doing 3.5 years for somebody else that was on a video. And the reason that is, a cop, a dirty cop, asked my girlfriend for a date. And she said no. But he know that she was selling. Her sisters were selling. Her brothers were selling. I think even her mom was selling. I mean,
so for sure, by like associating back in the in the mix of it, can get you into trouble.
Yes.
So we're gonna go ahead and take a break and get a drink of water, play a song.
Don't try turning tables instead.
Hi, you're listening to KRFP in Moscow Pullman. My name is Denise Miller for Recovery Radio, and I'm in the studio with Mac. And we've just been talking about his, basically just like life, growing up in Florida, in North and South Florida. And we were currently talking about his time in North Florida, where he was clean, but had met a lady, and there was some... there was some trouble brewing, and he got himself into trouble, too, inadvertently, and winded up going back to prison.
Again. Third time. Yeah.
So now how are things looking?
Well, from... Anyway, well, let me see. When I went to prison the third time, which it still irritates me, you know, because that's way, this, to me, that was the failing of the system. But they say once you get a number, you know, it's just in and out. You know, it don't matter if you did it or not. If a officer, if a police don't like you and he knows you have a record, he can just arrest you and say, and the courts don't argue your argument. Anyway,
right, because so, by this time you had a record.
Yes, and have been twice.
History, yeah.
Yeah, and if you don't know, if you're ignorant to the law, mm-hmm. you know, they tell you you'll get this much time and that much time if you don't. So you plea out mm-hmm. to a sentence mm-hmm. when you, even if you're guilty or not. If you're not, yeah, you plea out to a sentence. So I was determined not to go that time, and I still went. You know, I mean, I worked logging, I worked construction, I worked landscaping. I was very good at everything I did. I was worked at this one landscape company called Martex. I was so good, they called me Mr. Martex. Out of 7 supervisors, I was one, and they called me Mr. Martex. So I had good
so
work.
So hardworking, yeah.
Yeah, I had mm-hmm. good work ethics, sure. And I was determined not to go, but I love, I guess, being that close to it with that lady. Mm-hmm. You know, she looked great. She had thug passion, mm-hmm. you know, and she liked it, liked me. She loved it, me.
So, and was there like a familiarity a little bit with that lifestyle? Because you experienced that lifestyle.
And yeah.
Would you say that it was like a little bit thrilling? And
yes, exactly. It was mm-hmm. thrilling and a challenge, mm-hmm. you know. But I still wanted to be different, a working man. Mm-hmm. But I was still right there because I would take her at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
So I guess what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that that the drugs themselves, you know, have their power and, you know, addiction and things like that. There's definitely that whole side.
Mm-hmm.
But then along with that, I think I'm hearing you say that there's like emotionally, like the thrilling part of it, the people knowing who you are and knowing your name. You know, oh, that's Mac or that's so-and-so. And earlier when you were talking about the thugging and you selling. Mm-hmm. I mean, people came to you and relied on you.
Yes.
For what they wanted and so on. And I'm assuming that they, that they were mm-hmm. friendly. And so there's a certain side of all that seems appealing.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. It was very appealing.
So Mac, like moving forward, how did you get to Moscow, Idaho? How did that happen? Because Florida's a long way away.
Yeah, well, again, you know, I say when I came out of prison that third time mm-hmm. and I was, you know, angry because I felt like I went for nothing, mm-hmm. even though I put myself in that situation. So anyway, I started, you know, when I got my own place, I started using drugs again. And I was what you call a weekend warrior. I would work through the week and then on the weekends I would go and sell and do drugs again. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was wearing myself out again where I needed change. And then I met this lady from Washington that was there. And we was together for a few years. And then she was coming back. And I had an opportunity and a choice to come here. And her ex-husband told me that I can come as long as I leave the drugs back there. So it was an opportunity for change, and I needed a change. And so 3,000-something miles later, mm-hmm. here I am. Mm-hmm. And that trend, you know, of, I guess, I don't know, when I came here in 2003, I had the mentality of a working man. Mm-hmm. You know, and I loved the challenge, and I wasn't afraid to do something new, but I wasn't used to the snow. Mm-hmm. So my first job was, my girlfriend was a registered nurse. My first job here was something I thought I'd never do. I got my assistant nursing license, and I enjoyed that because the old people loved to see me come, and they hated to see me go.
And you were inside.
Yes. Yes.
Had to have an inside job, right?
Yes. Anyway, it got to, I think it all turned around again. I lost my 16-year-old son in Florida. And it was the worst excuse for anyone to do. But my excuse, and millions of people do it when they lose someone and they knew no drugs, that's just where they go, mm-hmm. back to doing drugs. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did, and it was hard to come to my senses. And by the time I did, probably 6 or 7 months later, I was already tainted, you know, here of tainted, and I mean by being labeled as a drug user, you know, and being black, it was actually labeled as a drug dealer too, mm-hmm. you know.
And going back came about because of what emotion were you going through? Just like pain and
yes,
yeah, I'm just
yes, and yeah, I was going through a lot of pain, and that's how I met the people that I call my family here now, and they're on my Facebook profile picture. I can't change it. I would never change it.
That's awesome.
You see me and four women standing up, five actually. You know, Amanda, their baby, Whitney, mom, and grandma.
That's
four generation of women I got there.
So those four generation of women, are they your current like support and family and
yes.
love kind of situation? Yeah.
Yes, they are. They was, I call them earth angels because I don't know, they had this ability to see the good in me. And when I first met them, I was trying to make some money to leave. And probably I wanted to go to Oregon to visit some friends, and I didn't know how far it was or mm-hmm. what I needed. So I started back selling, and these people, Mom and Amanda, I loved them, but even before I loved them, they seen my stress and my pain in me, and they would ask me, "Mac, what's the matter?" And I try to play it off like nothing. And they knew, and I still don't, I can't figure out how they knew mm-hmm. that I was in pain. And they would do this little teacup dance. I'm a little teacup, this my spot. Mm-hmm. And I would crack up because the mom and the daughter, both of them would do it. And I'm like, are you serious?
Childhood nursery.
Yeah, and it's funny.
And, that's awesome.
And bad as I was hurting, they made me laugh. You know, and then grandma, she took a liking to me. And to me, it was a very touching thing that she cared. She cared. And she can look at me and tell, she say, "Mac, you're not feeling good." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "No, I'm not." And she would say, "Yeah, because you look a little pale." And her daughters and granddaughters would say, "Mom, come on, he's black. How can you tell?" And she was right. And the next time she see me, she said, "Oh, you look better." I said, "I feel better." She was like, "Yeah."
So, we have just a few minutes left. So if you want to just touch on some things that are going on now, what's life looking like right now?
Well, I'm at I'm at a point where I needed serious help, and I went to Sojourners. Mm-hmm. And right now they are my backbone, my strength, you know, my providers, my survivors. And, you know, so I'm able to have a place to stay. I don't have to worry about a roof over my head, food or anything. So I'm doing all I can to make my life better. I'm doing GED classes, which all I have to do is get my math done, and I have my GED. Nice. Even in my age, it'll still be nice to have that.
It will.
So I'm trying to, I know all about the drug life, the thug life, and it's not appealing to me. Mm. I love country life. I love country music. I listen to a little rap, but anyway. So
change is happening.
Yeah, change, yeah. Big change.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, big change is happening, and I even have the police officers. They'll come by and talk to me, and we'll joke, and I'll tell them. So usually, I see you pull up, and I'd run, and we'd sit there and talk to them. So I feel great that mm-hmm. I can talk to anybody. Yeah. Police pull up, and I don't run now.
Yeah,
that's a big thing.
That's a big change from what you've talked about earlier in life. That's awesome.
Because police pull up, it's automatic run, whether you did anything or not.
Yeah, you were saying earlier, like, you know what that sound is.
Yes,
and, you know, and when people were clearing the streets, when you turn the corner and stuff like that, you knew stuff was going down. And I bet when you walk out now, people aren't clearing the streets, and you're not hearing
and people are,
that noise.
They are anxious. They're anxious and eager to help me, you know, especially here in Moscow, Idaho, which I didn't want to live here. You know, I thought it was, I haven't seen races here like it's been in South Florida, but I didn't want to be here in Moscow, Idaho, but it is great. I love it. The people, they're eager to help me. I love going to the library. You know, I get on the computer, I rent movies, read certain books, look up stuff what I need. And it feels good to be, I guess, normal.
Yeah.
Or to be, when I get my GED, I feel more like I'm in society now.
That's awesome.
I guess that's the way you put it.
Well, we're going to wrap up. I just really, really appreciate you taking the time to come down here today and share your life and with our listeners. And this is Denise with Recovery Radio. And you've been listening to KRFP in Moscow Pullman. Mm-hmm. And we're going to finish out with a song, Ain't Wasted No More Time.
Maybe sometimes then you don't.